Good morning. How y'all are? I heard that Robert Welch was here. Oh, there he is. The bearded wonder. Yeah. I remember him when he was that high. Now he's that high.
I remember
you. Thank you. That's ancient. Good to be with you again. Hope that this is going to work. Let's see here. Yeah. A number of you have asked about the Enneagram. If I was going to cover that in here. And we briefly touched on it last week. But I want you to hear from the best authority that I know of to explain the origins of the Enneagram, because it's passed on off today as a personality grid, like Briggs-Meyer, you know, that type of thing. And in essence, it's really not. It comes from New Age sources, or occultic sources, from my dear friend Marcia Montenegro, probably the foremost authority that I know of on analyzing the Enneagram. And I want to take a look at this because the Enneagram is the proof of the same worldview that we've been talking about. The worldview of mysticism, the occult, Gnosticism, basically is based on inner knowledge, secretive knowledge, omniscient knowledge within. So tap in to your inner, by way of your inner journey to the divinity that is in. And that's been popularized over the years by, in so many different areas. But she's going to analyze for us the Enneagram, its origins, especially the promotion of it across denominational barriers, across the whole spectrum of Christianity, whether it's Roman Catholicism, whether it's the emergent church, which is kissing cousin of progressive Christianity today, and the entire Protestant church world. This is making its inroads into that. So, and I think we've got it keyed up so we can hear it, but rather than taking any questions on it afterwards, I want to move on. Hopefully she'll answer your questions. And we might have a Q&A time at the end, maybe, because I've got some other areas that I want to cover.
The Enneagram started off from a man named George Gurdjieff, who was born in the late 19th century. So most of his teachings were in the first part of the 20th century. George Gurdjieff had been raised Eastern Orthodox, but he turned away from that and turned to esoteric teaching. He traveled. Supposedly he met Sufis. Sufis are followers of a mystical form of Islam, and other teachers. And then he came back with these teachings and had a following. And he taught something called the Enneagon. It's a diagram with 9 points, but there was no personality points there. It was just a diagram that he said was a diagram of cosmic reality, and that the universe could be seen in the Enneagon. And the Enneagon described all of reality. This idea was followed up by his pupil, P.D. Uspensky. And Uspensky, who was Russian, wrote about the Enneagon and added more information to it. He added the idea of 3 areas, described 3 areas of man. Like the mind, heart, and instinct area. And then his writings were published after his death by his wife. And then there were followers who picked up on those teachings and took them further. There was a man named Oscar Ichazo who had a school on the coast of Chile called Arica. So his school was called Arica. And he was basically an esoteric occult teacher. He's actually still alive. But he's in Hawaii, he's retired. And Ichazo had these secret teachings in his school. One of his pupils was Claudio Naranjo, a Chilean psychiatrist, who was a spiritual seeker. He's also still alive. Naranjo learned about the Enya gone from Ichazo, and Claudio Naranjo actually says in a video on YouTube that he and Ichazo claimed the Enneagram was ancient, and they knew it wasn't ancient at all.
At the time, they used to say he had learned it from a very ancient source, from the Sumerian, Babylonians.
We know that could not be true.
And lately, he's been claiming that he got it directly from a higher source and not from a historical source. From inspiration, you know, from revelation, that is his word.
That's probably closer to the truth.
Yes, yes, I trust it.
And then he said, you know, I'm the one who came up with the 9 personality types. And he said, I based that partly on my observations, but he said it was mostly from automatic writing.
So this came from my own observations, but mostly from automatic writing.
Automatic writing?
Yeah, it came to me from automatic writing.
What did?
The specific information
about
enneotypes, which I then verified for observation.
So he claimed right there he got most of it from automatic writing. That became the 9 points of the Enneagram, taught in a very New Age kind of way. That was taken up later by New Age people. But Claudio Naranjo went to an institute in California called Esalen, E-S-A-L-E-N. And Esalen was sort of a think tank for New Age and psychological experimental therapies. It was actually kind of a wild place in the 60s and I think early 70s. Naranjo was there, actually rose to a level of prominence there. And one of the people who came to Esalen was Bob Ox, who was a Jesuit priest. He learned these ideas of the Enneagram from Claudio Naranjo, and he took that into the Catholic Church, which is how Richard Rohr learned the Enneagram. And so it was in the Catholic Church for a while, and also at the same time in the New Age, being taught by New Agers. Helen Palmer, a very prominent New Ager, wrote a book on the Enneagram, or at least one book that became very popular. I remember this from when I was in the New Age. For a while, I didn't hear much about the Enneagram at all. And then all of a sudden, I started hearing about it because of Richard Rohr's book on the Enneagram, and it was a very big hit. And then all of a sudden, I noticed some of the progressive Christians were too white. They like Richard Rohr, so they were talking about the Enneagram because of his book. And they adopted the Enneagram. And so for a while, it was just there, kind of on the edges in progressive Christianity. But then all of a sudden, now in the past, you know, maybe, I don't know how many years, maybe 3 or 4 years, it's gotten into the church via books like The Sacred Enneagram by Christopher Hurtz and The Road Back to You by Suzanne Stabile and Ian Crum. I want to point out that all three of them, or at least Suzanne Stabile and Christopher Hurtz, learned the Enneagram from Richard Rohr. Christopher Hurtz also claims his other teachers. He names the other teachers for the Enneagram and includes Helen Palmer, the New Ager, and another one, Don Riso, who is a co-founder of the Enneagram Institute with Russ Hudson. The Enneagram Institute is New Age. It's a New Age entity. Although they've polished up their website so that they don't look quite as New Agey as they used to. But the Enneagram has nothing to do with Christianity or your spiritual journey. It's all arbitrary. It's not based on any psychological studies. It didn't come out of the field of psychology as any kind of tool. It came out of the New Age. And it's being used as though it has validity, and actually it has no validity at all. People read into it what they want to. you know, it's easy to identify with things like that. I saw that as an astrologer. People identified with their zodiac sign, or they identified with their birth chart, and they would say, oh yeah, that's me, you know, me, that's describing me, because it's very easy to start seeing yourself in things if you want to. You want to latch on to something. And we're naturally self-absorbed. I mean, we love to hear about ourselves. That's one of the things that's true for all men and women. And will continue to be true. So the Enneagram is very popular because that's exactly what's happening. You're hearing about yourself, so you think. My biggest warning on using the Enneagram would be that you begin to filter who you are and why you're doing things through your Enneagram number. You're identified with one of the numbers, 1 through 9. And so you start identifying with that number and describing yourself that way and seeing things that way, like, oh, I must have done that. I know I did that because I'm a 6, you know. Or, you know, I'm like that because I'm a 2. So that's the way I always do things like that. That's how I see things. You start filtering everything through that number, and it becomes more and more true to you. But it's very selective. You know, you're selectively picking things that match your number. And it's very dangerous. I mean, this is exactly what people do with the zodiac signs. The same thing. It's the exact same thing. And you can ask across the United States, and you find that on a regular basis, about 33% of the people believe astrology is true. And people read horoscope columns every day. And to some degree, a large number of people in this country think their zodiac sign is really them. And it's the same thing with the Enneagram. You can pick anything and do the same thing with it that you do with Enneagram. The way we should see ourselves is through God's eyes, what Scripture tells us. And how we grow in Christ is through what the Word teaches us to do. And how we deal with areas in our life, deal with sin in our life. The way we grow in Christ is all laid out in Scripture. And there's no need for some kind of false personality tool.
Okay. If you want more information on that, we've got tons of it. And obviously, you can pull up Marsha's YouTube. That's what I did. But the reason why I did it is because Greg Davis and I on Priority Talk Radio 101.1 this past Thursday interviewed Marsha on the Enneagram. So, as far as mysticism is concerned. So, part of our ongoing series on how America became pagan. And all of this smacks the paganistic world of our view because it has a tendency to destroy the creator-creature distinction. And again, when you remove the personal creator God, the transcendent God out of the equation, all you've got left is stuff. That includes us. But only us have a spiritual appetite. And we can't become atheistic, even though we may call ourselves atheists. There are no true atheists at all. There are no atheists in bunkers, dwarfs, potholes, whatever those are. Some kind of hole on your part. But when you do that, of course, you start feeding this desire for spirituality. Some people call it an inner light. Marsha would call it, all of this stuff tends to go inward on an inward journey. And that's what mysticism is all about. But when you do that, they assume that by this inward journey that they're going to find their perfect divine self. And of course that fits right into all is divine by nature, and the Brahmanistic religion, all is Brahman, Brahman is all, because we're all part of the divine. We have a divine soul, but that divine soul is just one of many divine souls that make up the universal soul. Okay? Without the need for God whatsoever. And I'm using up all of my time. Now, I've already talked about this. We talked about the yoga issue last week. Let me follow back up on that a little bit. Again, the yoga ban in public education was brought about by Watson Fellowship, the Rutherford Institute, and the Eagle Forum Coalition together 29 years ago. We didn't think we had prayer that it would become state law. It did, and was in place, but not enforced for 29 years, and it was overturned. Last year, Jeremy Gray, Democrat representative of the state of Alabama, and now it can be offered as an elective. But Eric Johnston, who many of y'all know, a friend of mine, been in a task force on trying to figure out some of this paper stuff for a number of years now. He and Dan Roberts saw to it that an amendment would be placed on the allowing yoga to be taught. And that the amendment basically guts the meaning of yoga, okay? Renders it down to nothing but physical exercise. And so if it's that, and physical exercise is already allowed, and at least without the need for a new law, why do we need a yoga bill? Okay? But there again, and Gray knows this, he admitted to the New York Times this, and they pointed out that these prohibitions would be in place as amendments to the new bill. He said, well, good luck on enforcing that. In other words, he's playing off of the ignorance of the public. And I may have stated this before. The Christians under Khrushchev in Russia were persecuted. They were tested by their persecution for being Christian. At the same time, and it's ongoing in America, we were then and still are tested by our freedoms. And we make our own choices. And we are very pragmatic. That's an adjective, I think. About our life. You know, so long as it doesn't, you know, bother me, I'm okay. So, and we don't look very much deeper than our own desire for pragmatism. And unfortunately, that divorces us from a lot of the discernment issues that we need to be up on. But anyway, let me go. There's my radio antenna corner right here. The new bill that passed, there cannot be any chanting, mantras, mudras, use of mandalas, induction of hypnotic states, guided imagery, and namaste. I bow the God in me, I bows to the God in you. There's only one God. We're not that. You know, school personnel may not use any techniques that involve hypnosis, the induction of a dissociative mental state, guided imagery, meditation, or any aspect of Eastern philosophy and religious training in which meditation and contemplation are joined with physical exercises to facilitate the development of body, mind, spirit. For purposes of this subdivision, the following items have been, the following terms have the following meaning. Guided imagery, what is that? Visualization, visual imagery, guided imagery, or guided fantasy used as an induction or deepening technique of hypnosis or meditation involving communication or suggestion, describing a scene in which the subject is encouraged to experientially participate, normally following progressive relaxation techniques. Tensing the muscles, relaxing the muscles, progressive relaxation techniques, combined with a destination, is equivalent to guided imagery, which is hypnosis. We have this in public school classrooms, being performed on children in mass in certain situations for 30 years now, which is by people who are not licensed mental health care professionals, and have opened up schools to practice, but not today. You won't see that in force, not with the woke culture and the cancel culture involved. Anyway, then meditation. Eastern meditation versus Western meditation. An altered dissociative state of consciousness, often synonymous with hypnosis, associated with or derived from mystical traditions of the East, sometimes referred to as transcendental meditation, normally induced by progressive relaxation, focusing on deep breaths and a mantra of a repeated word or phrase. Now, in distinguishing, Eric put this in there, and we worked on this, put it in there because we wanted to distinguish between Eastern meditation, which we've been talking about, and Western meditation. You live on the basis of object versus subject relationship, another chair we're sitting in. Okay? Eastern meditation, when you go through these processes, these dissociative techniques and practices, can render a person vulnerable to the extent that they cannot really tell the difference between fantasy and reality. All things are blurred, all things become one. And there again, we're into the monistic, distinctionless world of my view. He says, meditation does not refer to secular meditation, which involves alert, reflective, and cognitive contemplation. The difference again is Western meditation reconcentrates very, very carefully on our cognitive awareness. But Eastern meditation has as its goal and design is to lose contact with your alert or watchful cognitive self or an altered state of consciousness.
Why do they want to alter the state of consciousness?
Because they want to get rid of the distinction between creator and creation. Okay? Oh, but they're all for getting rid of any distinctions, as we can well see in the homosexual revolution that's going on, okay? Based on the same sex. If everything is the same, there are no distinctions. There are no binary distinctions as far as sexuality is concerned. Okay, now, it'll work if I turn it on my phone. There we go. No, it's back up. And the parent has to, if the child is going to participate in yoga, the parent has to agree to it to the point that I understand that yoga is part of the Hinduism religion. I give my child permission to participate in yoga instruction in school. And again, if they say okay, they're admitting they're in violation of the First Amendment. Okay, because they're promoting the ideology and practices of the religion, which is in violation of the First Amendment. So if Christianity can't be allowed in the classroom, then neither should this. The problem is, again, it's hard enough for people to understand their own religion, much less this type of stuff when it comes in like a Trojan horse. And that's what has been happening. Now, I mentioned this last week. We have a parent's handout or handbook for identifying New Age religious beliefs, psychotherapeutic techniques, and occult practices in public school curriculums. It's quite old. It is ancient, like me. 30 years old, but it's still very applicable for helping us to understand that. You can pull this up on our website, alcapologetics.org, or we can pull it up ourselves and send it to you. But anyway, well, let's move on. Talking about yoga, and again, this monistic distinction with woman like you, as far as the New Age is concerned, a New Ager would say that there's a universal mind or brain out there, and everything that even has the hint of a nervous system, we all make up the individual cells of that universal mind or brain. We are God, what one drop of water is to the ocean, or one tree is to the forest. We're just, you know, less quantity, let's say. But there's cosmic intelligence, that universal brain out there. Human side to it, the animal side to it. The Beatles said what? I am thee, thee is me, and I am the what? The walrus. There's no difference between you and me, no difference between us and the walrus. And since everyone aspires to something higher than themselves, they just call that God. There's no difference in the walrus and God. And then the vegetable, the tree hugger, the rock hugger, you know, all is consciousness, all is light, all is energy, all is one. Now, y'all see that? Who is Isaac Seabrick? Isaac, y'all probably never heard of him. You ever heard of Hard Rock Cafe? Some people have heard of Hard Rock. He was Hard Rock Cafe's founder. Now, this was 32 years ago that I found it. Line up in Minneapolis to a conference. And only American Airlines, American Eagle, American Airlines, that was their magazine. I just pulled it out. And I said, Craig, you want to see this? Hip and holy. Hard Rock Cafe's founder starts Burgers for Karma. Okay, now notice he's sitting on a prayer rug here, very sophisticated lotus yoga meditative position. Again, yoga means, to say it from Hindu Sanskrit, it means to yoke with Brahma, to become one with Brahma. And this is a pyramid structure in the back, long article in the magazine, where he says that he is bowing down to idols in an Egyptian temple when spirit guides came to him. And by the way, Marshall mentioned that Aranjo got the 9 points for the Enneagram for automatic writing. Automatic writing means that you were temporarily possessed by spirit guides, a demon, as you write this stuff. Okay. So, but anyway, he said he was bowing down to Egyptian idols. The spirit guide came to him and said, we want you to go to the Memphis, to the pyramids at Memphis on the Nile. Take the idea back home to Memphis on the Mississippi. Y'all ever heard of the Pyramid Sports Arena in Memphis, Tennessee? That's the beginning of it, right there. And it was initially financed by local, state, and federal taxpayer dollars. And I don't know how long it lasted. It was then converted from, and they were Final Four with the NCAA basketball tournament and all that. But right after that, it shifted hands and became a Bass Pro Shop. I thought God had a real good sense of humor on that. God likes sports, but not this kind. So, and then just a few examples of how it gets into area of sports. There's no area in our society that's been left unturned by this worldview. This is Phil Jackson. Remember Michael Jackson, Jordan, and the Bulls, Chicago Bulls. He grew up a Pentecostal, the son of a Pentecostal preacher. Then he got into this and he got into that, and now, and when he was with the Chicago Bulls, he wrote a book called The Tai Chi of Basketball, The Yin Yang of Basketball, And he, sometimes when the Bulls were trailing, if they ever were at halftime, he would come in and give that team to sit in a circle and turn the lights out and put a candle in their midst, telling them that he was going to exercise the demonic spirits that were preventing them from winning the game. He's a national spokesperson for laws for Unity School of Christianity. That's the Kissing Cousin of Christian Science, one of the nine science religions. He claims to be a Christian Zen Buddhist. But anyway, how about Tiger Woods? Not so much about Tiger, but about his background and about his parents. How much more time do I have, by the way? Oh my goodness. Time passes fast when you're having fun. You get to a certain age and it's fast. Tiger Woods, 1996. A lot of things happened in 1996. The way the sports new age and this world view is concerned. Sportsman of the Year, 1996. Article by Gary Smith in the Sports Illustrated. The Chosen One. Tiger Woods was raised to believe that his destiny is not only to be the greatest golfer ever, but also to change the world. Will the pressures of celebrity grind him down first? I hope y'all can see this. He says, he's interviewing Tiger Woods' dad, Earl Woods, who's long since passed away. Earl Woods was an S-Father, Earhart Seminars training. Warner Earhart used to be a former Scientologist. He didn't like it, so he got out and had his own organization group around the same type of principles. But anyway, he said, he, Tiger, will transcend this game, okay, and bring to the world a humanitarianism which has never been known before. The world will be a better place to live in by virtue of his existence and his presence. And Earl Woods says, can't you see the pattern? Can't you see the signs? Tiger will be more than any other person, any other man in history to change the course of humanity. Wow. Sports history, Mr. Woods, do you mean more than Joe Louis and Jackie Robinson? More than Muhammad Ali and Arthur Ashe? Oh, he's at it. Ask more than Jesus. So this is a proud accolade of the Father, but a pronouncement of the Messiah role as well. He says, more than any of them, because he's more, more charismatic, more educated, more prepared for this than anyone. Anyone, Mr. Lewis? Your son will have more impact than Nelson Mandela, more than Gandhi, more than Buddha, more than Jesus. Yes. Earl says, because he has a larger forum than any of them, because he's playing a sport that's international, because he's qualified through his ethnicity to accomplish miracles. He's the bridge between the East and the West. The East is East, and the West is West, and never the two shall meet, but the East has been in the West a long time. Okay? He's part of the bridge. Okay? And he says, there's no limit because he has the guidance. I don't know yet exactly what form this will take, but he is the chosen one. He'll have the power to impact nations, not people, nations. The world is just getting a taste of his power. He sure is. In many different ways, too. But Tiger, to his credit, he said, I missed something there. Let's see. Yeah. Okay. The wife, Titta, she was an Oriental mother to the Tiger. She was meant to bring in the influence of the Orient to introduce Tiger to Buddhism and inner peace. So he would have the best of different worlds. She comes to a conclusion. She said, she takes the boy's astrological chart, that'll tell us something, to a Buddhist temple in L.A. and to another in Bangkok, and is told by monks at both places that the child has wondrous powers. If he becomes a politician, he'll either be a president or a prime minister. If he enters the military, he'll be a general. She comes to a conclusion. Tiger has Thai, African, Chinese, American Indian, and European blood, she says. He can hold everyone together. He is a universal child. We're all one big mix. We don't need a God telling us what to do. That's basically what this is all about. Now, it's a little victory in the agony of defeat. Bill hasn't run yet, right? Good. we have this. You can pull it up yourself. Not like I said, 1996 was a platform for the new age. The World Olympics in Atlanta, the opening ceremonies were designed. You can pull up the sources of material that they used and promoted for this. It was designed as a reconstruction of the pagan environment that the Olympics originated in, with the worship of Zeus, the supreme Greek god. As a matter of fact, during the opening ceremonies, there were athletes and male and female going to this reconstructed 50-foot temple of Zeus, carrying offerings to Zeus during the celebration, the opening celebration. And Dan O'Brien was our decathlete at that time, and he was interviewed. Where did he get his inspiration? He got it from a conversation that Zeus had with his son, that he must find and fulfill his destiny. This guy was serious and hard at that. And it was really not just the reconstruction of the paganism that surrounded the origin of the Olympics, but it was a promotion of that worldview. The monistic distinction is really my view. Okay. We have time for two questions. Any questions? Any comments? Y'all all understand it. Yes, sir. Well, I think he has a conflict of interest. He is a yogi for 10 years now. And he has his own organization called Elevate Your Grind. And there's a conflict of interest. And these politicians ought to be looking into that. So, and he's quite open with it. So Montgomery advertises a number of times he had to change certain parts of the yoga thing away from its religious theme to only be physical. So he's involved in cancel culture. Cancel culture, the symptoms of that is simply redo, redefine, make it something else other than what it really is. And there again, the pragmatism that brings us to paganism. So, yes, sir. Well, the amendment was passed. Now, but there again, enforcing this amendment, that's quite another step. Well, they haven't yet, but February is coming. That's when the legislature will be back in session. So, real soon.
So, would a parent, in a school, would it be their responsibility to go to the,
Yes. Yes. Because there again, most people don't understand it because they bought in to yoga being hatha yoga, physical exercise. That's the way it's called off in this country.
So is it like PE in school?
That's what they're, but this is, kind of after school classes, I mean, pretty much. So. Okay. Well, any other questions? We will, there's so much more ground to cover. We only have one more meeting. We'll try to get into some of the CRT, the cultural Marxism thing, with the homosexual revolution that's going on for our last meeting. And, so, but I've enjoyed being with you.